Hello to all. Good morning.
Good morning. Why?
Thank you for your presence here today. And we go on, we continue. As we saw on day one, Katayantas Chamam Nityam. Krishna says, my devotees, get together. Don't go here yet. Don't get distracted. In the moment we get there, probably we should have shown it. Not yet. Katayantas Chamam Nityam. My devotees get together and talk about me perpetually and talk about the results of me, the results as you may be already seeing, of seeing me everywhere. How that affects how they live in the world, how they inhabit this body, their relationships, by perceiving the divine at every step. So that's where we find today ourselves after having talked so far about sadhu sanghas, bhakti, and different descriptions and definitions of bhakti. And yesterday, the context of that, of sadhu sangha, bhakti, studying the navigating the diversity and the complexity and the depth of guru tattva and shishya tattva and guru disciple relationship and all that it entails. I mean, not all, just a spark of that we touch upon. So today we are continuing with the Srimad Bhagavatam, as you can see. And we'll be talking, since yesterday we talked about, okay, what it means to be a good student of the truth, what it means to be a teacher of the truth, okay, which are now the symptoms of doing our homework, so to say, of walking our talk, of living, as we're talking with Bhakti Ras yesterday. You know, like the student does not only come with inquiries, that not only come with questions. Sorry. But they leave the questions, they leave in a spirit of inquiry. And it's not like, okay, I have the question at the moment of the class, and the class is over, and I'm like numbed, you know, till the class comes. Okay, I have a question. But it's like a spirit through which we live the lives. As the teacher, it's not only ones who provide guidance or instruction when a question is officially asked, but how they lived, they walked on the world, so to say. So a natural byproduct of living that spirit is one of the many sweet fruits from that vine or trees, what we will be seeing today in this verse, you know? Seeing God's presence in others, in everywhere. Basically, in everything, seeing guru everywhere. So we're talking about guru. Okay. God is everywhere. God is the original guru. Guru is everywhere, right? So we do not abandon the topic of guru tattva by shifting to talk about God. We still talk about guru because Krishna is the Adi Guru, basically, right? So we'll be exploring this verse today, and also in connection to this verse, I will be sharing with you, with or without your permission, a few, but with my permission, a few trailer from my forthcoming book. So I'm giving myself permission to do that. All rights reserved to the author. As well as other verses from the Bhagavatam, because I think the theme we will explore today is not as normalized as it should be. And it's not as internalized as it should be as part of our life practice and relationships. No? Serving others means serving God, means finding God in others, in relationship, in the neighbor, so to say. So I'll be sharing a basically overwhelming list of verses. Not overwhelming, but just a few, a little shower of that for you to realize, oh my gosh, this is all over the place. No? And if you are not seeing it, then why you are not seeing that's an extra homework you will have to do. I won't give that homework that you have to do. So let's go to the verse itself. This is not the verse I've learned by heart like the others ones, but I'm tempted to do so. The remaining ones that we'll share these days are newly discovered ones, so they're on the list of to be learned by heart verses. So this comes from fifth canto, fifth chapter, verse 26. And as we'll see, there are many of these verses in the Bhagavatam. So I could have just picked any of the other ones that I will be sharing today, but I just picked this as representative of the many others that I will be sharing, a few of them today. in my book, I'm compiling many others because, as you know, the book will be about unconditional love. And it begins with how unconditionally loved we are by the sweet absolute. But then comes the question, okay, what about when we become aware of that? How do we return the embrace? Not only in loving God back, but in loving others, everyone, everything. So in that particular chapter of loving others unconditionally, there is some substantial reference to different verses speaking about that. So the verse says, sorry. And I took my morning recall cough drop doing my morning homework. Okay, and some net summary report. UK retreat sponsor, if I recall, especially from 7 a.m. to 10 in the morning. Can have a whole like stand selling. If you want to, if you want to do some good business in our future retreats, you know. I'm sorry, I don't have with me any to share there in my room, but if you need, those in the video who didn't know what I'm talking about. Someone needs? Let's start with the recall a shower. Generally, someone needs. We don't want to plunder, rather than go because, okay. That's it. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Anyone needs? You know where to ask. Yeah, we don't want to start a. Car no caramel no how do you say this candy battle here yeah. So yeah, take your one before okay yeah before we continue make sure you have your one. That's it, war is over. Was a short one, thank you. So the verse says sarvanimadishnyataya bhavabdhis charani bhutani sutadhruvani Sambhavitabhyani padipadevo bibhiktadrikbhis tadubharharhanam me. So this is Rishabhadev speaking to his sons. But Rishabhadev is describing the Bhagavatam as an avatar of Bhagavan. So in other words, God is speaking here. Okay. Knowing that I am situated in every living entity, moving and non-moving, you should offer respect to all of them at every moment. In this way, you offer respect to me. Bhagavan Rishabhadev Ki Jai. Okay, there are many verses like this, not only in the Bhagavatam itself, many. And we'll go through mostly Srimad Bhagavatam since we are with the Bhagavatam in the Bhagavatam orbit. Today and hopefully ever, always, but other in other scriptures as well. So I picked just one. It's not like, oh, this is the only one who says such a thing. You won't find that anywhere else. So it's rare ideas in our tradition. No, it's all over the place, as we'll see. So I picked this one, which is very clearly encapsulating the spirit of it. So again, Rishabhadev's talking to his sons, the eldest. Of which is Bharat Maharaj. We know the story of Bharat Maharaj from the fifth canto. So this is the warming up all that with his father Rishabhdev instructing his sons. So again, it's Bhagavan himself in this particular form saying, knowing that I'm situated in every living entity, moving and non-moving, just in case, you know? Because sometimes we start with, okay, only humans, okay, not only humans and animals, okay, no, also the ones who do not move. Okay, plants still move, trees, minerals, and eventually concluding every atom, right? He's not going that far here. But Brahma Samhita, for example, says God is in every atom. Paramanu uses the word in every atomic, subatomic particle and the spaces between this the subatomic particles. Again, that's the implication of omnipresence. There is not a place God is not. So we say yesterday, quoting Richard, or God's address is everywhere. Not even in every heart. Because it can be all in every heart, every leg, every knee, every wrist, every finger. Right. Therefore, you should offer respect to all of them, to all entities, at every moment. Not only to all of them sometimes, but at every moment to just one of them, to all of them at every moment. Which again, it may sound a little overwhelming, but the prin at least in principle is saying you should, at least as we will see today, it doesn't mean, so how do I do that? Right? If we conceive offering respect like a particular gesture, no? I mean, the moment I'm doing this, I'm just failing to miserably to respect everything else around me. So that kind of be my whole life. Yeah. So it's more about entering, inhabiting a state of consciousness and awareness in which whatever I'm perceiving and I'm relating to, I'm perceiving its sacredness and I'm relating to it accordingly. And as we'll see, it's not just about respecting that we will get. I'm just giving you a trailer what we'll see today. It's not just about respecting people or things, but loving them. Because the goal of life is not respect. No, the goal of my life is respect for God, respect for others. No, love. Love is the ultimate form of respect. And here, Bhagavan says, and if you do that, or in this way, you honor me. No. So in other words, he's establishing this as a method of worship, if you will. Though there is no worship as we may think of it. And where is the artic plate? Where is the incense weaving? Where are the lamps? Where is the chamara? If not, there cannot be worship. Again, we need the proper paraphernalia. If the conch shell didn't sound, we are not adoring anything here. But as Tapan Anandini was yesterday reciting this beautiful verse by Śrīla Siddhārtha, we'll describe Gadadhara Pandit worshiping the Bhagavata and how through streams of tears. And those tears were compared to flowers, not flower offerings. Sometimes people, before reciting the Bhagavatam, they will do a puja to the Bhagavatam. Gadadhara Pandit didn't need the actual paraphernalia. It all was coming organically through his own body. So instead of offering flowers, lotus tears will come like lotus flowers, and they will wash away the ink from the Bhagavatam and empty the Bhagavatam or fill it. So again, that's a beautiful way of saying what do we mean by adoring something. Not necessarily I need the whole thing to be respecting and adoring and worshiping. It's just the over expression of my heart, no? Deepest form of respect comes there, and that's a way of worshiping God. Okay, I will see examples throughout the class today. Worshiping God, adoring God, as I say, I like more the word adoring. Worship indicates a little distance. Adoring means someone is adorable for me. And one way, one important way, one very tangible, concrete way is how we relate to others. How we develop our relationships is seva also. Just to frame it in that way. For those of us who think service is washing the pots and doing stuff, developing your friendship with one another, that's seva also. No? Developing our relationship is service. Developing our relationship is adoration, is worship, is pleasing Bhagavan as well. Again, many verses. Today I won't go word by word as we've done so far. I can send you the word by word if you want. We didn't have time, a space to put it there. But I'll concentrate on the idea that the verse is trying to convey, no? And the many references that shed light on this idea from different, slightly different angles to make a complete case. So at the end, we hopefully have some deeply ingrained notion of, okay, this is important. It's all over the place. I must pay attention to that. Like when we repeat sometimes something three times again, pounding the post. Oh, that's important. So here I will share more than three times, three verses about that. So that's the main premise of today's verse. God is present everywhere, in everything, and therefore we are invited to revere, adore, love, honor everything and everywhere. So the verse says, okay, I'm situated in everything, no? I'm situated in everyone. And of course, here comes an important point. How God is situated in everything. No? Because we can think, oh, he's just a mere passive witness. No? Like I'm everywhere. Like I'm there. I am there. Just that's it. But from which, how you are there, how you're feeling while being everywhere. So yeah, God dwells within every being. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam. I'm the best well-wishing friend of every living being. So not as a mere passive witness, but as a living, loving companion, greatest well-wisher. So it's a loving, intentionality wise, it's a loving presence. I'm there as the eternal friend, as the greatest well-wisher, as the beloved of every heart. I'm present everywhere in that way. And not just museum piece. Like sometimes we hear that idea. I've heard that from the, oh no, Paramatma is there just like a passive witness, and on top of that, passive witness taking note of what I'm doing. Like surveillance agents. Not so much looking at me lovingly, but watching over. And again, inherited notions about the divine from the sky, checking what you're doing and taking notes, and you'll have to pay for this, my friend. But that's not the way. No? Again, as we say yesterday, God in the heart, which is God in everywhere, because God finds heart everywhere, is Chaitya Guru, the guru in the heart. So a guru is not a passive agent. Right? A guru is not someone who's just and taking note of everything you do wrong or something. Then like guru is, as we say, greatest well-wisher friend, because you ultimately Krishna is the original guru. So again, let's put all this together. So God is in everyone's heart and in every atom. And it's Chaitya Guru. Guru is someone positively interested in my greatest potential and well-being. So there is a loving presence there, not just a neutral, impartial, in that sense, like cold witnessing. Just to qualify the notion of I am situated in every living being. Maybe it's the rest of the things not being said here, but that's implied and that's said all over in other places. So it's good to put all this together. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments also, just an aside, but in connection to this, okay, why the importance of revering everything is also for us to destroy faults such as disrespect and envy. And I will present that in this way. In other words, like actually, and because envy sometimes is like, oh, I envy you this bad, this bad. But when you realize God is in everything, automatically I don't need to. I mean, there's nothing to envy. Because oh, he has the, I mean, the most important person, the great with all the opulences, with all the everything, is everywhere. So no corner is more less fortunate than others. So to say, so I don't need to. Do I envy anything? I don't need to disrespect anything because God is there, right? So that's the most positive way I can naturally not go there, no? Not fall into this type of faults, so to say. And that's, for example, when the Bhagavatam begins, the second verse says, Dharma prajito kaitavo tra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Says this book is for the non-envious. And again, if we don't know how to read that, it may feel a little bit like, ooh, I then I won't read it, or why they are smashing me from verse two. We take it personal. But actually the idea is if you're envious, you'll understand the book, because this book is all about God's, in many ways, it's God's, as we'll see by the verses all over. Is God's presence everywhere, so therefore everyone is blessed. So if you approach such narratives with envy in your heart, it will be shocking for you. It will be too much because the book is not promoting this is better, this is worse, but everyone is blessed. So, and I'm directly saying, and if you have envy, hopefully the content of the book, this book will help you to overcome it, because when you realize, oh, God's presence everywhere, you realize I don't need to be envious. No, this isn't necessary, right? So again, why to give respect to everyone? No, sometimes it may sound like too much for us. No? Honor everyone. Of course, sometimes we begin somewhere. Honor father, your father and mother. Honor guru, honor whatever. So Prabhupada says, Srila Prabhupada says some interesting things in the commentary to this verse. So I'd like to share a few of them that I also share in my book. There's one, he starts with one famous line, at least famous at this point for me, because I've repeated that so many times. He says, the Supreme Lord is situated everywhere, and whatever he's situated is his temple. They're relishing it. Supreme Lord is situated everywhere. God is omnipresent. And whatever God is his temple. So if A is equal to B and B is equal to C, A is equal to C. If God is everywhere, whatever he is his temple, everywhere is his temple. So that's a very powerful statement for those of us who think, oh, I have to go to the temple. I need to go to church on Sunday. I need to go and to the house of God. Okay, that's great. We have to begin again, as we say always, we begin hyper-localized. Okay, God is only here, in this altar, this building, in this church, in this mosque, in this temple. But if you enter there and have a proper experience, the moment you are leaving, hopefully you feel with a more, you live with a more expanded consciousness. You realize, oh, there is also the temple. There is also God's presence until there's not a place where the temple is not. Right? Like I tell this story many times when I was listening once one video of the Native Americans, and they were find the divine in nature. And suddenly the Western Christians at the time came, some of them, and they employed them, enslaved them to basically destroy the forest to, with that wood from the forest, build a temple. And they didn't understand the math. It's like when the temple is already built naturally. So you want me to destroy the temple to build a temple? That doesn't sound practical to begin with. Temple's already. That was like for me, like, oh, aha moment. Right? So they had this expanded notion, okay, temple. And nature is everywhere, at least for them at that time. Now, okay, it's everywhere. So Prabhupada said, the Supreme Lord is situated everywhere, and whatever he's situated is his temple. Then he continues, we even offer respects to a temple from a distant place, and all living entities should similarly be offered respect. That's interesting. No? Like, I don't know, if you're in Puri, to give an example, and you see the dome of the temple, like Mahaprabhu saw at the distance, and the Sudarshan Chakra. You're kilometers, miles from the temple, but you're like. So in the same way, Prabhupada said, you know, if you should offer respect to everyone, even from the distance. It doesn't mean like necessarily an act. Not like you see someone, you fall in dandala with someone walking 10 miles away. But something comes to the orbit of your perception, and ideally, hopefully, that should evoke some form of positive response. Which again, it's many of these ideas I will be sharing today, as many of the things we have been sharing these days, are many times aspirational. Okay. I don't want you to leave this class feeling miserable about, like, I'm not there, I'm failing miserably, I'm not following the Bhagavatam. Many of these ideas are aspirational because, as we'll see, this type of vision, God is in everything, everything is in God, is a vision of the Uttam Bhagavat. That's a vision of the highest devotee. So again, don't torture yourself because you are not the highest devotee yet. Probably you are not, and you cannot be by force. But again, in terms of aspiration, it's good, healthy, empowering to have such a noble idea to pursue, which can never be fully attained. So that keeps you always going deeper and deeper. And ask back again, like a compass and a mirror, ask back, okay, where am I in connection to this idea? And where, how can I start to attain this ideal in one little step today, increasing the level of love and honor and reverence that I have to my environment? What a little bit, little step today, little step tomorrow, like exponential growth. Again, here not we are not talking, okay, after this retreat, guys, all honor to everything, everywhere, all time. No exceptions, no other option. No. But also again, not becoming numb to, no, that's the way I am, that's the way I relate, nothing to change. No, that's other extreme. So how to remain aware of the ideal, keep the ideal visible enough. So no, if you need to put it in the mirror, in your bathroom, no, so every morning, like, oh, I have a few aspirations ornamenting my day. No? So that puts my day in context. Because if we don't start our day with certain aspirations, even if they are long term or middle term, even the long term aspiration can create a form of middle and short term aspiration of the same idea. No? Long term aspiration, seeing God everywhere. Middle term aspiration, seeing God in my, I don't know, my immediate community. Short term aspiration, seeing God in my mother-in-law. So to say. Nothing against mother-in-law. Or short term aspiration, seeing God in myself. Start to relate to me according. But anyhow, continuing. We even offer our respects to the temple from a distance, Prabhupada saying the same way, I see someone walking there. I shouldn't just like neglect, oh, that's another human being walking. Oh, that's a bird passing. That's a dog barking. That's a tree. Hopefully we can notice them, like acknowledge their existence, as we hopefully do with one another. Imagine if I'm here and I just walk by and I don't look, don't see anything. It's like, that's strange. But we keep doing that all the time because we are surrounded by living entities. So it's a way of trying to increase our awareness of others' existence. Let's begin there. And then in connection to the divine. So Prabhupada then says, an advanced devotee, and again, here we are talking here about some degree of advancement, considerable. An advanced devotee will offer respects to everyone. And in case for us, everyone still remains human race, he concludes saying, to everyone, even to cats and dogs. Of course, it's not limited to cats and dogs, but just to give an example to not limited to Gaudiya Vaishnavas, to spiritual people of sister traditions, to the human race, right? So then comes the question, okay, how to offer respect to a cat, to a dog. Again, it's not like, okay, dandava to the cat will look at you like. And then comes the idea, one of the best ways to respect everyone, and we are getting there, is, okay, God is in their heart. No. That's not the only thing. It's not like I only respect you because God is in your heart, but there's nothing else to respect. But let's begin there. Because sometimes we may have difficulty in finding someone and finding something to respect in that person. Sometimes certain people challenge us with their behavior and say, there's nothing to honor here. Especially human beings, of course. No? I'm not talking about cats and dogs here. But human beings behaving as cats and dogs, which is worse than cats and dogs. So then in those cases, okay, at least see that God is in their heart. Start revering that. Even if you don't find anything else. Begin at some safe point where there's always something sacred. And that may open the door to something else, to seeing that person, something else. Then Prabhupada quotes this famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, I think it's verse 19. Vidya vinaya sampane brahmane gavi hastini sunichaiva svapakcha pandita samadarshinaha. Speaking about the equal vision of a pandit who sees equally, Brahman, cow, elephant, dog, and dog eater. Again, these are just five examples. It's not just this, it's limited to five. It's just like a spectrum, you know, from Brahmin, who is traditionally revered in society, you know, to the dog eater, to everything in between. And Pandita Sama Darshina, a pandit, a real scholar, it's not just about having brain knowledge, but Sama Darshina. He's Darshina, Darshan, he's seeing everything Sama, equally. He's looking at everyone equally. So Prabhupada's quoting that verse while saying all that I just said. Like meaning the equanimity of the sage vision is based on, oh, God is present everywhere. Well, there's even a painting that was done in connection to the bird. They had the elephant, the dog, and a true Paramatma manifesting there. Right? So yesterday we talked the guru in the Gita. You should say Jnanina Tattva Darshinaha. The guru's Tattva Darshin, it's a seer of reality. And here the Bhagavad Gita says Pandita Sama Darshinaha. The pandit sees everyone equally. So that's a way of saying Tattva Darshinaha. Seer of realities mean seeing God everywhere. And attaining equanimity. Also, we say yesterday the guru was upasamashraya, took shelter in tranquility. How can you become tranquil? Pandita Sama Darshinaha, see everyone equally. No? Srila Prabhupada continues in his commentary, one last part. So he says, seeing everything equally or seeing everything as sacred, a clarification, important one, is different from the theory of pantheism, which holds that everything is God. Everything has a relationship with God because God is situated everywhere. So there is a fine line. Pantheism says there is no God, actually, but nature is God. So they worship nature as God, but there is no like a separate entity called God. To our theory, our tradition is not pantheistic, but it's panentheistic, which means not that everything is God, but that everything is in God, and God is in everything. Stay with that for a moment. Pan and theist. Theist means theos means God. Pan means everything. Pan and theism. En means in. So God in everything, everything God. Bhagavad Gita says that in verse 6:30. Yomam, Krishna says, Yomam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati tasyam na pranasati sachamena pranasati. Whomever sees me in everything and sees everything in me, I'm never lost to him, he's never lost to me. Lovely. Yes. That's a beautiful verse. For whomever sees everything in me and me in everything, which again doesn't cancel God exists as his own person, their own person. I'm never lost to that person never lost to me. Which again, seeing Krishna everywhere doesn't mean that Krishna is popping up personally with flute and peacock feather from every atom. That is like, you couldn't function in society if we are having such darshan. So it's perceiving God's presence in everywhere, but that doesn't mean literally having like all the time personal darshan from every pore of creation. Right? Of course, there is a form of having darshan of Bhagavan, and the scripture describe that. And there's also this more general perception of God's presence permeating all of existence. That's the vision of the mystic, basically. And this verse and these ideas we are discussing are very connected also to arguably the most important thing that has been said in our tradition that Mahaprabhu said, his golden rule, the third verse of Shikshastakam. The most important instruction to chant the names of Bhagavan. And manadena means offer honor to everyone. It's basically the same thing that it's been said. But again, why to offer honor to everyone? Look how they are behaving. Again, let's begin on this idea. God is in them. As terrible as they are behaving, God is not abandoning them. And all this starts to be connected to what we were watching tonight, the podcast about Etty Hillesum, because she was witnessing so many human beings behaving in such horrendous ways. And still, she could see God's presence in their heart. She could see how they were behaving out of ignorance, that there are no actually evil souls, in inherently evil souls. And she could forgive them, those who were killing her and their family. But that's another way of embracing the spirit of offering respects to everyone. So how we are, again, high bar. But again, it's good, it's beautiful to know about those cases, to know, oh, that's possible. That's possible. I mean, it's possible, impossible for me, but I'm seeing the life of this and this person. That shows it's possible. And it's not just it's possible for them. Again, they are embodying my highest potential, guru. Tihilism is part of our Shiksha Parampara. You see their life and it's like, wow, she's reflecting back all that I could become if I dared to do so. That's not just she's unique and special, but I'm not that. Everyone has a story about Krishna saying, everyone's wonderful. So again, as I say before, we are to honor everyone. And that, as I will talk in a minute, that may take different forms according to where we are and the dynamics of the exchange. Because God is in them, and as I said before, not only because God is in them, but because how God dwells within them, loving everyone unconditionally. It's not that God is in every heart just like hanging out passively without any particular feeling for anyone. So I'm just here. Okay, I respect that. But if you know, oh, that soul is loved by God. Oh, that one also. Oh, everyone. So I'm honoring that you are a beloved of the sweet absolute. Even as little as you may know of that, and as horrible as you still behave, oh, there's something to honor in between all that. The real stuff. You are being loved by God. That's to be revered. That's to be adored. Wherever that happens everywhere. So I know this is a challenging one, but we need to be challenged. Even if we fail the mark, especially, and we will have the exercise later, but especially with relationship where we have difficulty and we are with people that we cannot see anything good in them. God still loves them. It doesn't mean that God loves horrible things they may be doing. Let's just give the example. Adolf Hitler, it doesn't mean that Krishna is loving the Holocaust, but he's loving the soul of that person, which is untouched by all that horrible conditioning. And in connection to the horrible things that happen, God is loving that in the form of feeling compassion for that, which is a form of love. Not loving that, like, wow, that was great, I love it. But still, there is some form of love expressed in the context of horror. Follow my point? Horror happens. I love that. I don't love the horror, but I develop feel compassion for it. And that compassion is a form of love. So in that way, God continues, keeps loving everything all the time in different ways. The beauty and the horror in corresponding ways. And he's inviting us to do the same, to learn to love in all circumstances. That's unconditional love. Conditional love is I can only love when things goes nice. I can only love when this is the circumstance, this is the condition. But in this horrible situation, I cannot love anything here. Unconditional love knows how to even love there. So again, this verse, as we say before, is ultimately not about respecting others, respecting God, at least with the understanding of respect, like a formality. Like, because many times we hide in a formal gesture of respect. Many times we hide the opposite of it. Sometimes, okay, an internal is like, Sometimes when someone's like this, like, oh my gosh, what's behind that? So yeah. So it's about loving, not respecting. And we ultimately respect converges in love, as we'll see. Well, let's start sharing a few quotes. But before going to the Bhagavatam, I have a quote from Elif Shafak. She's the author of this interesting book, The 40 Rules of Love, which was gifted to me last year, I remember, by Kanupriya in Germany. Very nice book about the life of Rumi and his meeting with his teacher and friend, Shams of Tabriz, and another story, parallel story to that. And the book includes in the narrative 40 Rules of Love, composed by the author, but very aligned with the Sufi teachings. But there's one that I'm sharing here in connection to the topic, about how easy may be to love God, but how difficult may be to translate that into how we relate to God's creation or other people. She says, "It's easy to love a perfect God, unblemished and infallible that he is. What is far more difficult is to love fellow human beings with all their imperfections and defects. Remember, one can only know what one is capable of loving." Rajavidya. There is no wisdom without love. Unless we learn to love God's creation, we can neither truly love nor truly know God. If I want loving God, as we say the other day, bhakti, Krishna Anushilanam, it's loving Krishna, loving everything that is in connection to Krishna, which is everything. Oops. Oops. Right. So I cannot say, God, I love you, but I hate my neighbor and all these people here on earth and nature, and I don't want to do anything with them. He said, oh, loving me is loving what is related to me, or put another way, loving me is loving what I love. And I love everything. So you have to learn to love everything. The goal of life is not to love God. The goal of life is to love everything. And that includes God, of course. And that includes everything because everything is in connection to the divine. I Prabhupada say, if you love me, love my dog. Which means love the things I love. You kind of love me and kick my dog. So we kind of love God and kick nature. And kick the neighbor. Well, that's why, and this is another powerful quote that's even more powerful from I forgot her name now. The name of this contemporary Christian mystic. I only love God as much as I love the person I love the least. Dorothy Day, thank you. That's powerful. I only love God as much as I love the person I love the least. In other words, my love for the divine becomes mirrored in how I relate to everyone else. So if I'm hating you and mistreating you, that's how I'm relating to God, actually. Because you are loved by God, you are connected to God, and God is fully present in you. So Jesus will say, what you do to unto And to others, you are doing unto me, basically, right? So everything is interconnected. Again, this is the price of interconnectedness. No? The demand, the challenge of as beautiful. Oh, everything is interrelated, interconnected. Everything belongs. So romantic, so beautiful, and so true, but so challenging because you play out the implications of that, and you are like, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. Because I'm invited to honor, respect everything, fall in love with the totality of reality. Cannot use God just as an excuse not to relate to anyone else. And again, as I say, loving everyone or all these beautiful quotes doesn't mean that according to where I am in my life, I need to, I don't know, again, approve every action or remain close to everyone. Sometimes we may be in a toxic situation, abusive situation, difficult situation, and also love may include boundaries. As we say, unconditional love may include conditions as part of its unconditionality. Love can include confrontation. Love can include accountability. Love can not only can, should sometimes include distance, So I can love you better from the distance. I need a respectful distance. I may not be able to remain in your proximity and love you as much as I can. I need a distance. But hopefully the distance is in the person, how to say, is favorable to love, to some form of appreciation, some form of respect. Whatever form it takes, we take that stance according to our situation, because again, loving us, just to not to forget, loving others and loving God includes loving ourselves also, because love has to be loving in all directions. Cannot, it has to remain coherent in all the quadrants, right? It's not like I love North, I hate East. I love God, I hate you. I love you, I hate myself. No, it has to remain loving all over. So whatever form it takes, our love, respect for everyone, distance, proximity, boundaries, confrontation, accountability, at least the minimum common denominator is you should not refuse anyone's fundamental dignity. As you are a beloved of God, that's your fundamental identity, dignity, integrity. Even if you're a mess, even if you're the worst of the worst, so to say, or if I am that, or I feel that, still nobody can take away that fundamental dignity from anything or anyone. And that all this invites us to, again, to look from a new way, and that's the meaning of respect. Remember, the word respect comes from the Latin re spesare. Spesare come from spectacles. I mean, spectacles come from spesare, which means something that helps us to see. Spectacle. So re spesare means to look, and re means again, not like recognize, remember, rather than dismember. Respect. Look again. Look again. Readjust your angle of vision. Adjust your angle of vision till you find, oh, the divine is everywhere. Everything is worthy of my adoration. Now, respect. To look again means also to look beyond our first reaction. No? Because we tend to see things in a certain way in the first reaction. As we spoke the other day, we tend to immediately put people in boxes. Maybe just by the way they dress, the way they walked. I see an strange, quote unquote, strange coming from 10 meters. Some assumption already is like, cling. So then we need to bring respect. Look again. Maybe at the distance you feel, oh, this guy looks like a really bad person. Now you're getting close in a walk. And he said, good morning, how are you? Whoops. Okay, respect. No? Change your angle of vision and change your angle over and over again. No? So we have to learn to see beyond our first reaction, beyond the identity we have assigned to others, beyond even beyond the particular moment in which we encounter them. Because I can encounter someone on a bad day, and they are grumpy or whatever. But that's not the totality of their being. So respect means not limiting them to that particular moment, because I will be in those moments so many times per day. So, and I don't want to be put in that cage by the other person. So do unto others as you would like to be done unto yourself. Not the golden rule of all traditions. So respect, look anew. I would like to say, see others according to their potential, according to who they are as beloved of the divine. But even if they are not aware of that, see their potential to acknowledge that fact and behave wonderfully. See them in terms of potential, because you are being seen in terms of your brightest potential, not in terms of your dark past, not in terms of your messy present, in terms of your bright future. That's who you are in God's eyes. And that's so, oh, thank you. Beautiful. Yes, beautiful. Now extend that vision to everyone else around you. Because if you don't do that, you won't be able to perceive that you are being seen in those terms. You are being seen in those terms, but until and unless you play out that in relationship, you will live as if that's not happening. And that's miserable. So, yeah. So again, as Mahaprabhu talked in the third verse of Sikshastaka, we cannot properly praise God. No? Kirtaniya Sadahari, third verse of Sikshastaka, concludes with praise of God, Kirtan. That's at the end. He first brings some preliminary consideration for that Kirtan to be Kirtan. So basically saying, Mana Amanina Amanadena, no? Offer respect to everyone. And then you will be able to engage in Kirtan smoothly. In other words, that verse saying, you cannot properly praise God if we do not first know how to relate properly with others. No? That's how can you engage in Sankirtan. One of the meaning of Sankirtan, San can mean Sangha Kirtan. No? Sambandha Kirtan. Sambandha means relationship. An acknowledgement that everything is in relationship. Samyak Kirtan. Samyak means complete Kirtan. What it means complete Kirtan? Kirtan with Sambandha Kirtan. With Sangha, with awareness of how we relate to one another. If not, Kirtan is just musical entertainment. And many people do Kirtan from that place. Kirtan is over, they don't know how to relate to each other, they don't talk deeply with one another. See you in the next event. It's a concert. There is no depth of heart. So that's not Sankirtan. That's not the third verse I'm suggesting. So again, and Mahaprabhu speaks about humility. There are so many other qualities. Of course, as we always say, humility is not thinking others are always right, I am always wrong, that you are so humble. No, you are dysfunctional. Yes. But humility means, for example, many things, but in this connection will mean like, okay, every person exceeds my interpretation of them. That's humbling, not to remind yourself of that. Each one of you, I'm talking just by myself, each one of you exceed my interpretation of you. Because I have some idea of who you are. I mean, I think I have some idea. When I relate to you, oh yeah, Maheshwar, yeah, Jiva, yeah, Brother Priya, yeah, Aditi. I mean, hopefully in a good way, but still we have some version of the other. And being humble means reminding yourself, each one of you perpetually exceeds my reading of you, my interpretation. So that keeps me open to wonder and to rediscover and to rediscover you as well as me in relationship to you. Right? And each one of you are loved by Krishna before any other category I put you in. You all belong to the divine before any category, any box I want to put you in. Oh, you are this, you are that. First things first. You are a beloved of God unconditionally. You belong to the sweet absolute, me as well. Let's begin the conversation there. Then we go into the details, to the secondary stuff. So it's very important that we learn to relate to each other in that way because to embody unconditional love for one another. I'd like to share one section from my forthcoming book in that regard. It says, which will be called the book will be called Irreversible Grace. No, I mentioned that a few times, but just mentioning here one more time. Generally, we used to talk about irreversible damage, no? But there's something called irreversible grace. If there's irreversible grace, there's no actual irreversible damage. We often speak of God's unconditional love in lofty terms, but for many, those remain just words in the wind until someone embodies them. In other words, if I tell you God loves you, God loves you, God loves you, okay, oh, thank you. Until someone comes in my life and loves me unconditionally, it's like, oh, okay, now I start to get what you are saying. No, so that's the point here. Until someone embodies those words, they may remain just like words in the wind. Especially for those who struggle to trust the invisible, no? The God, ethereal, that I cannot see, that loves me unconditionally. I'm not sure, who knows? Especially in those cases, the divine must first become believable in flesh and bone. Love must risk embodiment. Again and again, so what is eternal can be known. So the importance again, based on this, for us to become embodiments of divine love, of unconditional love, as much as we can be unconditional to everyone. That's perhaps one of our greatest devotional responsibilities. Let's put it that way, no? To make God's love believable to others. No, that's for me a better word than just saying to preach. Because for me, it's not about preaching. It's not about selling books. It's not about like getting money from other people or getting people into a building or making members and converts. But make God's unconditional love believable to the other person. Whatever else happens after that, but give them a genuine epiphany of that. Through how you behave, through how you relate to them. No? Not merely through what we teach, through what we again speak, but through how to say, through how safe, seen, and dignified they feel in our presence. How we hold space for them. That's a way of showing unconditional love. It's not just caressing them, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. Yeah. That may not be what they require. Surely nobody requires that too much. At one point, like, stop caressing me. That's annoying. Let's talk deeply about other stuff. Hold space. I need to be seen and heard. And so yeah, that means making unconditional love believable to others. So again, this is, as the verse says, that's a way of worshiping God. No, adoring, offering respect to me, Bhagavan is saying here is by worshiping others. I don't think this is so emphasizing Gaudiya Vaishnavism. In other traditions like Christianity, they emphasize that more. And as I say, sometimes one reason could be also because in one sense they don't have that much of a detailed, clearly defined definition of God and transcendence and what happens. So big part of their attention comes to their relationships here and now. And I'm not saying that's a disadvantage. That's a very interesting way of becoming immediate in embodying all that. So I think there's something to learn from us there. Not to change our philosophy, but to enrich and cross-pollinate and extend, okay, all the beautiful things we heard and known about Radha Krishna and Lila and loving interaction and translate that in the here and now. Because if not, we become spiritual bypassers. And it's all about leaving this world and transcending and getting there and just enjoying in Leela. But I don't know how to deal with these people over here. Right? So, anyhow, let me share one more section from my forthcoming book. Now comes a few quotations. So far, I've been parroting myself a lot. So I'll share a few things. Still, it's from my forthcoming book, so it's a form of parroting myself. It says, more often than we realize, now comes a challenge. Another one, my friends. Don't hate me. More often than we realize, we love others not for who they actually are, but for who they are in relation to us. And of course, nobody's exists separately. We all exist in relationship. But my point here is utilitarianism, right? More often than we realize, we love others not for who they actually are, but for who they are in relation to us. The Srimad Bhagavatam observes, this is in Brahma Stuti after it, observes that for most, Sukadeva Goswami says, the dearest object is ultimately one's own self. And that our affection for children, possessions, and relationships often flows from this self-centered axis rather than from genuine other-centered love. I love you because you are my daughter. But why do I do not love any other daughter in the same way? Because you are not my. Again, no attacking mothers here. Take it personal. And I'm taking it general. I'm not saying you are doing that, you are there, but sometimes it happens to one degree. And that's how we start. Love starts somewhere. In other words, what masquerades as love may still be a refined form of self-concern. When the other begins to step outside the box we have unconsciously prepared for them, discomfort arises. Oh, you're starting to be someone else than the one I want you to be. Discomfort arises not because they have betrayed us, but because our understanding of love has been exposed as conditional and incomplete. Because I don't know how to love you now, that you are not the person I want you to be. This is not to condemn anyone. It is how love begins. Primitive, partial, utilitarian, and how it gradually matures if we are willing to stay present and learn. So I think it's important, as thunderbolt-like that may be, for us to accept that's probably the case. It still is a primitive beginning of love. Still self-centered, but we have to accept that, and from that we can grow into this noble ideal of universal unconditioned love. Because if I don't see that, and I think, no, I'm already loving, you are reducing all that love can be to your current version of that, and then therefore you cannot grow beyond that. And no wonder you may not be fully satisfied, because you are stuck in a still relative version of love, so to say. So again, to be honest, most of our human love begins mixed with personal need, projection, self-concern. Let's do an honest assessment, reading of the room, so to say, like personal inventory. And again, the challenge is not to condemn. We don't need to condemn this beginning. It's like condemning a baby because he's pooping himself or whatever. It's absurd. You won't condemn that. It is even charming. Not for the ones who have to clean. But just the falling, the learning to crawl, the broken words, the messiness. So we're not to condemn any primitive beginnings and any of anything. But the challenge is, again, to notice in this case that we may be loving the role someone plays for us, you know, rather than the person they are becoming. So that's the discernment there. Again, it's not about self-condemnation. It's just like, okay, I'm still loving the role. I'm still attaching the identity of the person to a role they perform in connection to me. So that remains utilitarian to how to go beyond this step by step, day by day, gradually. It's not a cheap thing, what we're talking about here. So again, it may be aspirational, long-term goal, but which are the middle short-term goals to gradually step into that realistically. Okay, let's go to a few verses from the Bhagavatam that are somehow resembling this verse we are studying today, to pound the post and show you how this idea is all over the place in our tradition, and therefore we are being called to embody it. So there's a few verses I'd like to share from Uddhava's speech. These are like almost seven verses in a row, but I'll share them in part. But it's like a shower of beautiful revelation. I mean, it's Krishna talking to Uddhava. The section of the Bhagavatam is called the Uddhava Gita, 11th canto, chapter 29, for those, the nerdy ones, verses 13 till 19. A nice series of verses, contemplations. Also, for you to have them, and then if you would like to sit with them. So Krishna tells Uddhava, O Uddhava, one who views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each of them, and who by taking shelter of this divine knowledge offers due respect to everyone, is considered actually wise. So one definition of wisdom there. Such a man sees equally the Brahmana and the outcast, similar than the verse of the Gita, the thief and the charitable promoter of Brahminical culture, the sun and the tiny sparks of fire, the gentle and the cruel. For him who constantly meditates upon my presence within all persons, the bad tendencies of rivalry, envy, and abusiveness, along with the false ego, are very quickly destroyed. So again, here Krishna is prescribing this as a sadhana. For those who constantly contemplate this fact, I am present with them, all these faults dissolve. Anartha Nivritti takes place by this bhajana kriya, this practice. It's a part of practice. Again, this is not just one verse of the Bhagavad and one class that Maharaj gave one morning in the UK retreat. That's something that we can and should ideally make part of, crucial part of my day, because we are all day relating to everything. So from which place? So those are the first three verses. There is more. And he said, Bhagavan continues, disregarding the ridicule of one's companions, implying the society may not appreciate if you try to do this. Mm-hmm. Society may say, no, certain people are beneath you and you should not respect them, whatever. So disregarding the ridicule of one's companions, in other words, disregarding vox populi, public opinion, one should give up the bodily conception and its accompanying embarrassment. In other words, oh, he was born in this low stature or form of this and this section of society, that's a low case. Accompanying embarrassment, according to people's ideas. One should offer obeisances before all. Now we enter literally into Dandavat Parikram. Mm-hmm. One should offer obeisances before all. Again, even the dogs, outcasts, cows, and asses. And again, just examples. Falling flat upon the ground like a rod. So now we are becoming literal. Sometimes you may need to fall to the ground. And sometimes not just, no, I'm doing it in my mind. I'm respecting everyone. Well, sometimes you may need to embody that way. Remember when we did the Dandava Parikram to Govardhan? That was like a very somatic experience of that. Okay. 4 hours per day thrown on the ground. I mean, in the good sense of the term. Sometimes we feel, oh, having an inner feeling or respect for everyone takes my body to express in a certain way. But sometimes you start with the body and that creates some inner condition as well. Right? And in very circles of our tradition, this was, and in some cases still is, a sadhana. Like offering, the Goswamis, we are told, they offer certain number of dandavat per day. As you count certain number of rounds, they will do like an exercise, like employing the body to incarnate, give shape to that inner feeling. Until one has fully developed the ability to see me within all living beings, which again, until one has fully developed, it may take time. One must continue to worship me by this process with the activities of his speech, mind, and body. So until this becomes second nature, and you are honoring everything, you should try to practice this, to how you speak, how you think, how you engage with your body. And the last two verses from this session, it's all one section, 18 and 19, Bhagavan concludes, by such transcendental knowledge of the all-pervading personality of Godhead, one is able to see the absolute truth everywhere. Freed thus from all doubts, one gives up exploitative activities, and now comes an interesting part to conclude. Bhagavan says, indeed, I consider this process, using one's minds, words, and bodily functions for relaxing me with all living entities, I consider this process the best possible method of spiritual enlightenment. So you cannot get more direct than that. With this, I'm not saying abandon all other sadhanas, stop doing what you do and just do this. But you cannot like skip this type of statement. So Bhagavan is saying to the, I consider this process the best possible method of spiritual enlightenment. So that's an emphasis there. Not to be like, once you see it, you're going to unsee it. Which again, it speaks about how to relate to everything properly. We all need to do that. Even, oh, but I'm chanting rounds and I'm worshiping the deity. And I'm, yes, but all that happens in relationship. Always, you're constantly in relationship. So this needs to be applied because we're always in relationship. So in this way, like honoring others, service to others is not merely the consequence of realization, but many times the realization, that's a place where realization begins to develop. Can be both ways, because sometimes in realization, I'm honoring everyone, but sometimes by quote unquote forcing myself to honor others and serve others, I have realization. It doesn't need to be one or the other. It can be both and. And that's again very much in line and very coherent with the worship of Bhagavan. Again, we worship God by relating to others properly. They are not two separate processes. Here comes another section I want to share. I may need to bring some refreshness, respect, look anew, take a deep breath. Stretch a few more minutes. Bear with me. There is a beautiful section from the Bhagavatam in this connection that connects worship of God and relating to other living beings that I always love to quote from the third canto, Kapila Dev speaking. Some months ago, I did an article on that, which is about Archana. How Archana can be spiritual bypassing if you don't know how to relate to others. Sometimes when people ask me, Maharaj, can you give me some advice regarding Archana? Yeah, read these verses. Which in one way that do not seem to be talking about Archana. I talk about how to be coherent in your relationship. So when you go to the altar, it's not escapism. Yeah, so these are eight verses. I'll read them one after another, straight. Yeah? Brace yourself. So this is Kapila Dev speaking, which again is Bhagavan. So here we have God talking to us. I am ever existent as the supreme immanent self of all in all living entities. Well, same point. If one disregards any of them, and thus disregards me by extension, and yet worships my deity form, he makes a mockery of such worship. So that's the main principle. Now the ne next verses unpack that with even stronger language. If one neglects to see the Supreme Lord present in all living beings and the self and worships my deity form, he indeed is offering oblations into ashes. There's no fire to do swaha, like playing is useless. If a person offer respects to me, but is inimical to other beings, hating other bodies, not seeing others suffering as equal to his own, his mind does not attain peace. Even if someone worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of my deity in the temple. Performing his prescribed duties, one should worship the deity until one realizes my presence in his own heart and in the hearts of other living entities as well. Like the fruit of Archana is realizing the deity is everywhere. He who creates an internal distinction between oneself and others, not in personal terms, we are the same, but in terms of we are totally disconnected. He who creates this distinction, for him holding that divisive view, death brings terrible fear. Therefore, one should honor me as the self residing in all beings by being charitable and considerate with that undivided vision of friendship to all. Kapila Dev Ki Jai. That's Archana 2.0.
Can you just repeat which verses they were?
Yeah, that's third canto, chapter 29. I love these nerds. Third canto, chapter 29, verses 21 to 27. Yeah. And of course, this is somehow connected to the different views, different levels of devotion, Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama as well. The Kanishtha sees God only in the deity and loves the deity, but doesn't know how to relate to anyone else. The Madhyam loves God, has friendship with devotees, is merciful to other people, and is careful with people, the relationship that they may be damaging. So they have a broader scope of knowing how to relate. They see God somewhere else apart from the altar. And the Uttam sees God's everywhere. No? So it's interesting because the way that Bhakti Adhikar is measured, eligibility for Bhakti is measured, is according to our capacity to see God everywhere. That's kind of the yardstick. No? Kanishtha on the altar. No? Madhyam in different people. Uttam everywhere. So that's the thermometer, the yardstick. How much you're able to see God's presence everywhere and act and respond accordingly. That's the yardstick. So that means that's important. That shows where you are in your bhakti project. There are other beautiful verses in the Bhagavatam. We're just warming up, just in case. I won't leave you, take you here 1 week without eating or sleeping like Sukadev corrected. So. It's just a few more minutes. We can always bring some extreme example to justify everything. There are a few beautiful verses in the Bhagavatam where you find like a trinity, a recurring trinity, where devotees pray for, may I have attachment to God, friendship with the devotees, and love for all living beings. This is found repeatedly. There is one beautiful verse by Parikshit Maharaj himself when he's saying this. When he knows I have 7 days to live, he's praying that way. And he says, "Yeah, Mahapsuyam Yamo Payami Srishtim, Maitriyastu Sarvatra. May I have friendship, Maitri, with everyone, every living being. May I have attachment for the divine. May I have friendship with the bhaktas." So it's a beautiful trinity. Everyone is included there, so to say. May I love God, may I cultivate deep friendship with like-hearted brothers and sisters on the path, and may I love everything and everyone else. So everyone is included in the pack, so to say. That's the full arc of love. No? God, community, creation. No? God, community, creation. And the creation is a whole community. And again, it's all interpenetrating one another. To sever, in English, you say sever. Seven. To sever one or the other is you are distorting the whole, to say. And each dimension balances the other. No? Because if I only worship God, no community, no creation, you know what happens. You put God too far away. And if you only emphasize community, you can become tribalist, and so on and so forth. There are dangers to just emphasize one of these points of the triangle of the Trinity. So the three have to remain in place, balance, right? God, community, creation. A few more verses from the Bhagavatam just to make the case clear. This is everywhere, okay? Trying to imprint a few bhakti samskaras.
Where was that verse from, the one you just chanted?
Which one?
The last one?
Which is that
Oh,
one?
Last group.
You were saying
Oh.
the three. But Richard.
Okay, I share it because I know it, but I don't remember the number. Let me check. Okay. Yep. Bhagavatam, Canto 1. I mean, this is just one of many that say the same thing. 1, 19, chapter 19, verse 16.
Thank you.
1:19:16. But there are more than that. In my book, my forthcoming book, I'm referring to all this. So, in case you are going crazy taking all the notes, all that, and plus more will be there. So, you will really go crazy when we see how many footnotes are in a beautiful way. Like, wow, this is all over the place again. Let's go to now another verse from the Bhagavatam. Just sharing it. Sorry, I wrote it wrongly here. Let me see. Okay. The verse says, speaking about an advanced devotee again, and says, he's such a perfect devotee, offers respects to every living entity because he's under the firm conviction that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has entered the body of every living entity as the super soul. So there is this conviction. Even if I don't have the full realization, at least I have this faith and conviction based on some realization of that. God is in everybody. Everybody also. And every atom, as we say. So again, to see a body inhabited by God is immediately also challenging the way we rank bodies according to beauty, ability, color, gender, age, health, usefulness, social status, caste, whatever. So many ways we actually unconsciously we just judge someone for their body. So this verse that I just said, which is Bhagavatam 3:29-34, it's okay, see the body in that context. God is in the body. That's the first consideration. Another verse, just quickly going through a few before concluding. A person with average intelligence, now we are not going too high, a person with average intelligence. To keep it relatable, right? Hopefully we are there. We'll see. We'll see. We won't make any IQ test here. A person with average intelligence does not think the head and other parts of the body to be separate. Similarly, you know where it goes. My devotee does not differentiate Vishnu, God, from anything or any other living entity. Again, not that everything is God, but everything is inseparably connected to the divine. So I just don't separate hand, heads, leg. They're not going their own way separately. They're all one unit. There's the heart. Okay, God is the heart, so to say, the living pulse in everything. Like Krishna saying in the Gita, Vasudeva Sarvam. No, Vasudeva is everything. Again, it can be read impersonally. Everything is Brahman. Everything is God. Vasudeva Sarvam. Everything is God. I mean, God is in everything. Again, panentheism. And as we say before, this vision is not limited to how we treat humans. We may need to start among us human fellow humans, but there's a bigger verse from the Bhagavatam, more than one, I'm just quoting one, that is extending this principle to our all species. Previous verse was 4:7:53. This one is 7:14:9. Just in case you doubt that I'm making up all the scriptures. Bhagavatam 7:14:9 says, one should treat animals such as deer, camels, asses, monkeys, mice, snakes, not the most user-friendly ones, some of them, birds and flies, mosquitoes, of course, exactly like one's own son. How little difference there actually is between children and these innocent animals.
Oh.
This is a button, don't kill me. Don't kill me and don't kill mosquitoes anymore. Sorry?
Still annoying though at times.
Yeah. As we are to each other.
Yeah.
But we won't kill each other. You're annoying me. Sometimes I heard that no, we can kill mosquitoes, you can kill an attacker, yeah, but the reaction has to be proportionate. Now, someone is annoying you and you kill them, it's like, well, that was a little annoying.
Thank you.
So, this is the verse of the Bhagavatam. Long list of animals, and of course, not limited to these animals only, but just going through the spectrum from a deer, which is very dear. Oh, how cute, so nice. No? Then to a camel, which may not be so nice or so relatable, to an ass that may be like, Sam, you don't use you were to use ass to something not so interestingly. to a monkey, which is can be quite mischievous, especially if you go to Vrindavan, and then to mice, which are not our favorite, snakes, no, birds, okay, to balance the equation a little bit, flies. So covering all the spectrum, treat them as you treat your son. That should set us into some lecture to be in. Okay, how to relate to this? Again, in a practical way, right? The cobra is appearing and you won't try to breastfeed the cobra or something like I do to my son.
Or your son that says, he just treats me like a fly.
That's another way. Of course, the other way is don't treat your son like an animal. Unless you're treating the animals like your son. So again, different statements from the bottom, which are very interesting, and to see other species as your own children. And again, yesterday we explore how the Bhagavatam give this list of 24 gurus to see other species as your own guru. So different ways to put it. Okay, see other species as guru, see the other species as your child. Different ways to try to, in at least one way, the Bhagavatam is trying, at least one way you get the lesson. No, and relate properly to everything and everyone. One last verse from the bottom. There are many more, but just one. 6, 4, 13. And they're all coming from different cantos, just for you to see. In every canto, you can find statements like this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated as the Super Soul, Paramatma, within the cores of the hearts of all living entities, whether moving or non-moving, including men, birds, animals, trees, and indeed all living entities. Therefore, you should consider everybody a residence or temple of the Lord. By such vision, you will satisfy the Lord. And you will be satisfied. Yatma supersedeti. So everything is a temple, the Bhagavatam says here. And this is very beautiful, mystic poetry. Everything is a temple of God. And again, these are only a few verses that I've selected from the bottom. There are way more. It's all over the place. It's a main sadhana. It's very important. Very relatable, very challenging, but also very relatable, very human, very concrete, tangible, very relational. Let me conclude with one more verse, but not from the bottom. That was a verse that I wanted to give a separate class, but I don't think we'll have time, so I will include it here because it's connected to this verse. This is a verse from Chaitanya Bhagavat. We still continue with the Bhagavat. Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Bhagavat, the extension, Gaur Lila, the extension of the Bhagavatam, which points back to the original verse we are studying today. The verse says, it's nice. Offering obeisances to everyone, another way of saying offering respect to everyone, this is the dharma of a Vaishnava. One who has no affinity for this is just a dharma flag bearer. No, it's called in Sanskrit dharma dwaji. Like you bear the flag of dharma, but you are not being dharmic. So you make a show of being dharmic. I'm for this cause, right? You bring a flag of the cause, but then you don't walk your talk. So one who has no affinity for this dharma, which is honoring everyone, is a dharma dwaji. Dharma flag bearer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur that says that's one of the worst type of asat sangha. The opposite of self. A dharma flag bearer means a pseudo follower of religion who merely makes a show of adherence but does not actually follow it at all. So again, some strong words from Chaitanya Bhagavat. So we don't, if we are bearing a flag, we need to walk our flag, not walk on our flag, on top of our flag. So this is the dharma of a Vaishnava, to honor everyone, duty. Don't become a dharma flag bearer. There's a danger to that because in that case, dharma flag bearer means my religious identity becomes more visible than religious transformation. So I use my identity, my flag, my membership card, so I don't have to transform myself, actually. So sometimes the symbols of devotion can conceal the absence of the buried disposition these symbols are meant to express. And that's why the bottom begins saying Dharma Prayuto Kaita Botra. That's the beginning of the bottom. In this book, all cheating in the name of religion is rejected utterly. We are not here to deceive ourselves in the name of bhakti. That's a tragedy. Okay. And one last quote from my book, short, I promise, and it's the last one. Okay. To love the all-attractive is to try to love those he finds attractive, which is everyone, even the broken ones, perhaps especially the broken ones, beginning with ourselves, but never ending there. The whole universe is God's beloved, no exceptions. If it is love at all, it has to be love for all. A quote from Father Richard Rohr. If it is love at all, it has to be love for all. So that's how I like to sometimes depict the goal of life, not just love for Krishna, but let's make it a more complex, falling in love with the totality of reality in an absolute way. Once I read also and added something, reading something from Ilya Delyush, is to the point of tears. Falling in love with the totality of reality in an absolute way to the point of tears. So you already know what to do. Answer when someone asks, what's the goal of your life? My life aspiration is to fall in love with the totality of reality in an absolute way to the point of tears. That's what I want to share today with you. Perhaps a question with which to leave this class is not so much, do I believe that God is present everywhere, but basically more like a curiosity in terms of prospect. What will change? What will become different in if I actually live from that conviction? What will be changing my way of I think and feel and I relate and I consume and I disagree? And if I will try to live from the conviction, the sweet absolute is present everywhere. And in order, of course, to make this more lived and integrated, we will we're concluding with one little exercise, a little prompt. And today in the evening, as I remember, today I won't be giving you like a, I mean, you can sit voluntarily with the verse if you want, but our main reflection will be, in the evening we'll be watching my conversation with Patrick Woodhouse on the life of Etty Hillesum, which is a very powerful embodiment of this verse. And after that, will be a time to share in the same groups we'll be sharing in the morning. And I will be sharing a small prompt for that in the WhatsApp group later today for us to know what to do tonight when after seeing the video. But first, the exercise. Yeah. Three prompts, 2 minutes each, usual format to keep things simple. So I'll share the prompts and then we'll start. The first one is who becomes, let's begin difficult, who becomes hardest for you to see as a temple of God? Who becomes hardest for you to see as a temple of God? Hasn't finished yet. And what happens within you when you encounter them? Who becomes hardest for you to see as a temple of God? And what happens within you when you encounter them? Okay, second one. When does your love become conditional? When does your love become conditional? On someone staying the way you need them to be.
Can you repeat that more?
Yeah. When does your love become conditional on someone staying the way you need them to be. When does your love become conditional on someone staying the way you need them to be? It's clear, right? Okay. And the last one. How could someone experience God's love more clearly through you? How could someone experience God's love more clearly through you? Okay, I'll stop the recording here. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai, Gaur Premanand Hari.